Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, my name is Barbara Hofmeister and I am your host for today's show. To be or not to be, the choice is yours. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about in the next 30 minutes. About the choices that people take in their lives, the consequences that come out of having made those choices. You're going to hear from really interesting people that sometimes have made wrong choices and were able to correct them. You will hear very, very inspiring stories, how people overcame their challenges and how people started to live their dream, to live the life that they truly choose to live, the life that they've always wanted to live. So get ready for an exciting 29 minutes from today's To Be show. Hi everybody, this is your host Barbara Hofmeister speaking and welcome to tonight's To Be show. I hope that you had a fantastic week and that you're ready to rock and roll. And rock and roll we will tonight, because we have a very, very special guest with us tonight. It is Mark Filippi, and Mark is a Listen to me. Hi, Mark. Are you there?
Oh, I'm sort of here, yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, let me try and unfold my tongue and get this out, your introduction, because somehow I got stuck at the first sentence. So let me just try and do that. So Mark is a behavioral chiropractic, and he's done that for the last 18 years, and he's just sent me a little write-up half an hour ago, and I'm deeply impressed, and I shall let him do most of the talking today. He's a published clinical researcher, a field consultant, and a postgraduate instructor. Mark is also a master practitioner of NLP, which is what I am too, and very passionate about human behavior and what lies behind it. And I think this is where we have two commonalities. So welcome to the To Be show, Mark. Really nice to have you.
Well, thanks for having me, and thank you for the traffic lights on the back streets getting over here to get me here close to 1 o'clock anyway. So
you did really well.
Yeah, I had a little to be or not to be moment there about 10 minutes ago. So thanks for getting me up here in the air and see if we can iron out a couple of the wrinkles in human perception here in the next half hour. So
yes,
where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, you suggested we take a somatic look at the happiness business, and that sounds really interesting to me, because I was talking, reading earlier on about somatic psychiatry, and I thought, well, that's an interesting point of view, because, you know, in NLP, we use sensory acuity, you know, to really see how people react and touching them and what isn't and so on. And I think that you have a very special point of view on that. So let's talk about the happiness business.
Yeah, well first, just maybe for your audience's sake, we'll just give them a working definition of what somatics is as a discipline, because it gets a lot of, you know, different interpretations depending on what hand is on what elephant here. And as a science, somatics was coined by Thomas Hanna back in the late 60s, early 70s. As a first-person science, which in science, you know, that subjectivity is taboo. It's anecdotal. We can't generalize it. It's not something we can measure externally. So they looked at it as being dismissive, as, oh, you know, who cares what you feel? Then, of course, we had an entire 2 decades about everything everybody felt, and all the instrumentation became more biofeedback-oriented and got that loop going. And what somatics fundamentally is a relationship. It's the study of the relationship between self and surroundings. So in that sense, it's kind of impersonal, it's kind of social, it's kind of universal. And when you take that all the way down to, you know, where the quantum people are fishing, you know, down there at the very, very small areas, the interaction is happening so quickly it's almost imperceptible. When you go way up to the cosmic, scale, where it's too grand, we can't understand how, planets are communicating, things like that, the conversation becomes irrelevant to us too. So we've always been forced in psychology and a lot of the, let's just say, postmodern disciplines to either look at a telescope or look at a microscope for our answers instead of looking in the mirror. And somatics office is a way to look in the mirror.
Excellent. That sounds really interesting because we want to have some practical things that people can use.
Yeah.
Because very few people use a microscope and very few people use a telescope.
But that's been our guidance system for years, is that we've been, all the way back, pre-scientific era, using things that were much more like five elements and things like that were more naturalistic or even supernatural. The gods did it, or, it was the sun god, the wind god. It was something external to us that we had no influence or no relationship with. It decided for us, and we were in that predetermined kind of worldview. And now we're in a situation where we've gotten a little used to the steering wheel, and now we're on the other side of the coin thinking we create our own reality and we're manifesting everything. So we've gone from being totally powerless to totally powerful. So we kind of defeated God and sort of took over his job. And now when things happen, we look for explanations that are pointing at some negative worldview or some, especially in this jihadist situation we're in. I don't know if you guys were tracking it in Europe last week, but seconds after the Haiti earthquake, Pat Robertson was on talking about Haiti making a deal with the devil. I didn't know the devil was open for business, but apparently... it's that same mindset. There's something out there. There's something external to us that has some sort of Calvinistic, a little scale, a little abacus that says for every good deed, you get this, and no good deed goes unpunished. So, and it's that mindset that the boogeyman is out there, somewhat controlling what happens. And then, of course, if we go the other direction, and cut off all communication with our surroundings, and become completely self-centered. Then you get a lot of what happens on the New Age side, which things like The Secret and What the Bleep and some of the other things that have come in the last 10 years that sort of wall off the world and say, no, you create your own reality and ignore everything that's going on around you. Well, don't pay any attention to it is the other thing.
Well, that's sort of a little bit looking at it from the extreme point of view, because I also noticed, I think that it's good that people are starting to look inside for their for what they really want and try to create it and not think that everything is external. But on the other hand, it also, this point of view also creates a lot of frustrations in my clients, for instance, that if their life is not going as they want it, they blame themselves up. And of course, the self-esteem that in most people is already low gets even lower because they only look at the superstars in whatever field and they say, oh, they've created their own reality and I can't, so I'm no good, I'm just not good enough and I don't know how to do this, and they feel worthless, which I think is also terrible.
Yeah, well, this has been the teaching from the psychology side, and that's why the self-help movement in the last 35 years has been a billion-dollar industry, because you just find another map until you find one that your guru works for you for that period of time. And you follow that creed, and the thing is that it creates this sort of, you go from villainizing things to victimizing yourself. And what somatics attempts to do is give you a sense of rhythm, a sense of being in conversation rather than being indoctrinated and then spitting out that map for the next best map that comes up down the line. That's why my interest in NLP became much more prominent in the 90s, as I learned that most of the conversations I was having with my clients were going in one muscle and out the other, so to speak. In my puppy dog days as a chiropractor, they talked about that every living system has an innate intelligence, a way to communicate with its environment and adapt. And what was happening was that, in the 90s, that's when people were popping Prozac like they were just, vitamin pills. Because the era of being happy started in the 70s, with lithium and things like that, these mood elevators, and then we got to the point where people were crashing and becoming manic and depressive. So we'll cut that off with the Prozac, and now you have these zombies walking around that didn't want to feel anything. Well, no one told the rest of the body, because most of the communication isn't verbal and isn't even conscious. So they're having suicidal dreams. They're having all kinds of memory come up, and that got me into maybe the issues in the tissues here. Let's go see what's going on with the tension in the body and look at the things that are rhythmic, that are independent from what people are sharing verbally, and that got me into nonverbal communication, NLP, looking at triggers, looking at cues, facial expressions, pupil dilation, all this funky physiology that became sort of like the backwash that everyone will talk about now in positive psychology as being the markers of someone who is in a what they call salutogenic or the origin of well-being as opposed to pathogenic, the origin of illness, in terms of the way people are wired. And then the last 10 years, of course, we've been digging around in the brain for the neurobiology of that. So that's where I've been hanging out, getting in trouble a lot because the streets have no name where I'm traveling. So you kind of step on a lot of toes, scientific, ethical, religious, political, but we're awash in it. And then if you just amp all that up with our digital nervous system called the internet, now you have all these conversations that are going on and with social media that used to go on locally, and now they're going on globally. So we're taking that noise level and we're cranking it up to degrees that the nervous system hasn't encountered yet. And you're seeing how, you know, it has both a generative and a degenerative effect where, you know, this time last spring we had the uprising in Iran, you know, with Twitter, everyone getting the word out, you know, what's going on in Iran. And you see the outpouring for the relief effort in Haiti, a lot of it coming through social media. So we're not relying on that same top-down paternalistic movement, which the happiness business relied on, because the happiness business has always been premised by the guru, you know. And the priests have moved from, you know, wearing robes to wearing the white coats of science. And we can't question those guys. Deepak Chopra being my whipping boy lately, because, of course, he's become the guru of the quantum. And if you could say, you could say quantum cookies, and people think that they're going to be smarter cookies. I mean, it's amazing. And that's one of the things in the last 10 or 15 years that I think has been underserved is the somatics piggybacked on another science that kind of grew out of it called memetics. I don't know if you guys in Germany or in Europe have been looking at that, but memetics is the study of idea propagation as opposed to just replication of biology, like generation to generation, like through family lines longitudinally. This is vertically, and the whole era of viral media. You know, something goes viral, like that Pants on the Ground song that my daughter keeps playing. From American Idol, I don't know if you guys have clipped on it on YouTube. But
we do have that here, too, yeah.
Yeah, so you've heard the Pants on the Ground? You've heard from this?
No, I haven't.
You haven't heard Pants on the Ground? All right. It's right after the show, click over to YouTube, put Pants on the Ground, and have yourself a good time. It's just how ideas get into the consciousness of a collective, and it spreads. Political slogans. Obama got elected on the whole notion of change, and now that's folding back on him. So all these ideologies have a field around them, have a consciousness around them that'll capture certain people's attention. And when you understand how you're wired in particular, that's where the happiness business works, is because almost 70% of the brains walking, talking, and chewing gum out there are wired into this philo-somatic orientation during development, which means they bond with anything. They bond with people. They bond with structure. They bond with the flag or whatever the first religious thing that they get in touch with. And they'll defend it because they're basically part of the middle of the bell curve, that status quo. And that's where happiness is, because really when you break it down, all happiness is what happens. It's a WYSIWYG. It's not glorified. It's not exaggerated. It's extremely normative. It's in the middle of the bell curve. The extremes is where happiness kind of begins and ends because you have a departure from the status quo, which threatens people. And that's why when you get change, It's not something that happens so naturally in a culture because you're fighting this tendency for stability. That's what most people feel when they're happy. Everything's okay. And when everything's not okay, you either have to amp up or you have to let go. And most people aren't good at dropping it, and they're not good at picking it up. So that's why there's people like you and me yapping around, trying to help them through the doorways and the hallways and whatever because there's no strategy for it, and especially when you get past the age of 30, like me, it starts to get more difficult to do that because you haven't practiced it much, and most of society's wired to kind of guide you day to day till you're about 25 years old, and they go ahead, you're on your own for the next 60, 70 years, and you get people that get used to living certain ways, and that's why this happiness business, unfortunately, exists at such great proportions where you could almost go on any given day there's going to be a workshop, there's going to be some offering that's going to tell them a secret or a tip or seven steps to this or five steps to that. And because people are desperate and they're extremely overloaded with social stress, that you can drop that line in the water and somebody's going to nibble on it. And unfortunately for the truth seekers out there that understand the rhythm of this, that message isn't as fancy, isn't as exotic, so it doesn't get sent. It doesn't have as strong of a mimetic pull to attract people, too, because it's not giving them the nice story. It's giving them the truth, which is not always as nice.
That's true. I find that a lot of people go to a lot of different seminars and workshops, and I mean, apart from the books, which most are not read, you know, they buy the books, but they put them
on
the shelf.
About 10% of the book,
Yeah, that really is a shame. But I notice also when I do workshops myself or when I attend them, that I see the same faces all the time, and I fly all over the place. And it doesn't matter if I'm in London or I'm in New York or I'm in Atlanta or I'm in Germany or wherever. I meet similar people or exactly the same people. And I ask them, you know, I mean, how come that I see you? I've not been here for 2 years and I still, you know, I see you again at the same type of seminar, just a different trainer. And they say, oh, yeah, but, you know, life still isn't going so well. And I ask them, what have you taken from the last seminar you went to? What have you taken and implemented? What did you learn? What did you implement? What helped you to move forward towards what you want from life? Because every one of us wants something different, right?
That's one of the difficulties in communicating these kinds of messages, is that there's a lot of backswing to these things, but there's very little follow-through because the accountability is on the person. And when they're used to having the accountability come from the guru, the teacher, the parent, the quote-unquote authorities, they're going to go back to that authority and look for that validation from those people. So wherever they got that fish from, that little fish, they're going to go back and they're going to become a disciple of that person's message, because that's what they feel they got. That's a state-dependent thing. You know, it's sort of click your heels and go home, Dorothy. You're not Nas anymore. You graduated. That's one of the things I like about somatic education, is that it emphasizes first-person authority, not third- or second-person authority, where I'm a catalyst, I'm a messenger. I'm not responsible for your well-being. I'm a catalyst for it. So, you know, just like your toothbrush is a catalyst for, you know, for dental health and dental hygiene, but you don't pray to your toothbrush or pray to your toothpaste, you know.
Yeah.
These are things that you do to naturally maintain your well-being. But most people want heroic means. They want that extreme. And they live in that comic book worldview where you create your own reality and it's all about, you know, your consciousness and the quantum. And what happens, what gets dropped in the process is reality, and that's a big thing to drop because reality is undefeated, just like gravity. And eventually it comes back together. That's why most people buy a self-help book, you know, say they buy one for New Year's resolution. Maybe they go out and buy your book, right? Oh, this is going to be the book for me because it's a nice sunny cover, right? Everybody likes you. And if this is going to be it, guarantee if you write it down, by July 4th of next summer, they'll buy a similar book, you know, because it's like they want to keep getting that state. It's a potato chip. It's a mental potato chip. So to get them to digest, be willing to go underneath and feel and get at the core of it and process it in real time, not in some island or some vacuum or some isolated a weekend where they just, you know, cut off communication from the world. Because the Tuesday or Wednesday after the weekend seminar, they're right back to the regular scheduled program because you're battling habit. And after the age of 30, you know, the stats are pretty bad. It's about 90% against you for changing lifestyle habits because they're so ingrained in the way that you survive. And survival is much more important in terms of your biology than a lot of the evolutionary things and the niceties that we'd like to do, you know, up here in the penthouse in conscious awareness. So, you know, that's why somatics takes you back to the roots of it, and it gets you down to get out of the story and get back into the motion picture, which is the way you breathe, the way you move, the way you feel, these rhythmic things, and you have constant guidance from things that are independent of all these different messages that are proprioceptive, that are much more into kinesthetic awareness, communicating with your surroundings through rhythm. And, you know, seasonal rhythms we talk about all the time in my work. You can get into lunar cycles. You can get into circadian cycles. How many people are popping pills just to fall asleep and wake up in the morning? You're trying to guide your physiology through chemistry. You're going to lose because chemistry is all your biochemistry, I don't care what it is, good, bad, or indifferent, is all guided by derivatives of how much you're in tune with your surroundings. So when your cortisol levels go up and down and your stress levels go up and down and your anxiety levels up and down, that's all proportionate to how much you're in tune with the rhythm of what's going on around you. Because there's one thing that none of these gurus talk about, because it's buried deep, deep under the mattress, is this thing called neuroception, which allows your system to feel safe. Every 4 seconds that you're alive, your brain has to do the math and ask a very simple question. It was in a movie, Marathon Man, a long time ago, with Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman. All he kept saying was, is it safe, right? Remember that scene where he's drilling in his teeth? So what's on your nerves is what's going to be on your mind. So if something's on your nerves, if you don't feel safe, if you're distracted, if you're not centered, you're going to have a little bit of hole in the balloon there. You're going to start leaking out some of your energy, and you're going to have this feedback loop that's going to make you feel the need to defend yourself. And that little level of stress response, it could be in the background. It could be some distant thing. If you're not, your system isn't aware of that and attending to it, at the end of the day, you're distracted, you're tense, you don't even know why. You know, so that's the reason why, if you emphasize the inside-out aspect of somatics, of being aware of things that are constant in your environment, you breathe 25,000 times a day. How many seminars can you go to? You know, it's like you can go to 25,000 a day in your body just by being aware of your breathing rhythm. And happiness is funny. It occurs on the breath out. So if I always tell people that are on these, you know, medications, I say, look, if you just paid attention to 100 exhalations a day, 100, out of 25,000, I'll give you 50. You're tired. 50 of them, okay? No, not even 50. I'll give you 25. 25. That's like 1%. 1% of your exhalations today. What? 25 breaths out. Come on, you can do that during commercials when you're watching American Idol. And just pay attention to the depth, the rate, and the intensity and the energy that leaves your body on the breath out. And guess what? Happiness happens as a result of release. It happens on relaxation of a muscle that's been contracted. It happens on exhalation of the breath. It happens on release of emotion, whether it's a cry or a laugh or a burp. It doesn't matter. And getting into the raw consciousness of that supersedes anything some guru is going to tell you from a stage while he goes back to his villa. I mean, I remember last year they had that that horrible accident out west, mm-hmm. in the sweat lodge, you know.
Yeah.
And the guy was out doing a talk 2 weeks later about the same stuff. $10,000, and people are dying in a sweat lodge because they can't get in touch with how they feel. They got to go to some tribal thing. You know, it's fun. Probably fun. I don't think it has much to do with happiness. And I think we've confused fun with happiness in the last 10 or 15 years pretty good, to the point now where that line is it's almost completely blurred, and we've become entertainment-soaked. And we forgot what precedes entertainment is a process called entrainment. You have to get you interested before I can get you to act. That's why, you know, with social media.
True. I mean, yeah, if you don't get them to participate, then you get no results. So
you have to engage them. That's why with your book, I'm sure you worked tirelessly writing that book, you know, and you know, really put a lot of your heart and soul in that book. You were engaged in every single word in that book, and that's the feeling that someone would get from reading your book if they corresponded to that. If they take it as the answer and you know, their lottery ticket. How many times have you seen these happiness people link happiness to wealth, and then the second that the person bites on the bait, they go, you know, money doesn't lead to happiness. So you get a mixed message even with that one.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a very strange, you know, we're living in a strange time. A lot of mixed messages to decode. That's why, you know, I got into the somatics and, aspect of it, to sort of kind of put a common denominator under all these different maps and keep that terrain close to their heart, so that they understand that it doesn't matter when someone tells you or shows you. It matters what you buy and sell within yourself. And that's where the e-commerce really goes on, is in the synapses there. And all of
So, Mark, what do you recommend? Because we are already running out of time.
Oh, my God.
What do you recommend people do? I mean, to just, I suppose, the 25 breaths a day, conscious breaths a day, that's 0.1% of the whole breath of the day, which is really nothing, will already calm them down a little bit and become aware of who they are and what they are.
Well, the first thing you got to do is be able to get centered within yourself, and that's why, you know, if you want to, if your listeners want to get more information how I guide people to doing that, they can go to my website at somaspace.org and join into the newsletter there. It's called A Vital Interest.
Can you repeat that, please, slowly?
Sure. It's SomaSpace, SomaSpace .org.
Uh-huh.
And you go right to the homepage, and you see the newsletter there. It's called Of Vital Interest. The current edition is there. You can click on it for nothing, and then you can sign up and get access to the archives. But just to give you guys an aside, is that really what you got to do is spend a heck of a lot more time staring at that reflection in the mirror until it's staring back at you, and you feel your feet on the ground, and you see that image in the mirror at the same time. Then take your 25 breaths, and probably after 4 or 5, you're going to feel a little emotion that you haven't felt in a while, because that is where reality is. It's right there between the sensation of your feet on the ground, the breath going in your body, and that image looking at you. And that reflection is looking at you while you're feeling your feet on the ground. I don't care what they come up with in any of these labs, you know, with the drugs. That is my drug of choice, basically, and that mm-hmm. is somatic integration. So if you spend more time doing that, you're going to start realizing that a lot of the things that you've been buying into are basically shadows of this consciousness that you can get anytime, anywhere. And you could do that in any conversation with any other human being, by the way. As soon as you lock eyes with somebody else, feel your feet on the ground, feel the breath in your body, and just like that movie I saw yesterday with my son, Avatar, there's a bond there. And that bond is invisible for the most part, but it's extremely accessible and tangible, and we just don't give it much credit because, like I said before at the top of the talk here, it's not as sexy and as interesting and exotic as some of these happiness maps that kind of, like I said, they either push the surroundings away or they stick you in the microscope or the telescope and take you away from that mirror, which is, to me, where the power comes from. So that's what I tell your listeners about this. And you can also join me tomorrow night with me and Barbara talking on my show on SomaTime. So you can
yeah,
get
that will
me.
Be fun.
Yeah, we'll be yapping tomorrow night, 9 o'clock Eastern. You know, and Barbara will be pre-recorded so she can get a little sleep, and I can yap to you guys. So join me tomorrow night, 9 o'clock on SomaTime in the East Coast, or if you're in Germany, wake up Thursday morning and listen to the archive, and you can get more about the somatic method, this approach I have to living in the rhythm. And I guess I'm running out of time here today, but thanks for having me on the TB Show. Good luck with the book, and we'll try and sell some more copies tomorrow night to get people not just happy but also healthy.
That is a good idea. That's a good idea, Mark. Well, I want to thank you for being here because, as you've read earlier on Facebook, I said I'm a bit nervous. I don't know this man, and I can't get hold of him, and I don't know if he's going. Well, you did turn up, and it was really great talking to you. And actually, I totally agree with you 100% with almost everything you said. Why? Because I realized that myself, that it's not about being guru, it's not about being different and better and more knowledgeable than the other people, because we're not. We're all learning, we're all on this path of our life. But I do believe that it is our own happiness, in as much as we take the time, like Mark just said, we take the time to look at ourselves and to appreciate ourselves, to appreciate our life, to appreciate everything that we already have. Because gratitude, for me, is a great path to happiness.
Well,
so this was
that.
Yes, thanks, Mark. So I will speak to you tomorrow.
Right, we'll figure it out. We'll get you on the air, and thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on the show, Mark. And I will speak to you soon, and thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, I will put Mark's link on the show page. And next week, we have Dangerous Debbie on my show, and we will talk about being a wealthy author. And you don't want to miss Dangerous Debbie. Have a wonderful, inspired, happy week, and I see you next week. Bye-bye.